Have you ever started a project, a job, work on something, try to build something, and you didn't have the right tools? Most of my life, I've never had the right tools. Now that I've retired, I've started actually purchasing some of those tools that I put off until my retirement. So I found out that given the right tools, a man can do about anything he wants to, or a woman. I made sure Claire had all the tools for the kitchen because I get hungry. So she never really had to want for the tools in there. But I postponed mine because I didn't have time to work anyway for most part. Now I do, and Marvin's helped me also. And I'm sure when you got into the handyman club, you either found out you had enough tools or you didn't. Have you ever found out you had too many? No. If anybody's ever worked on a car, Neil and I were having a conversation a few weeks ago about changing spark plugs in some of the vehicles that they produce. And he was telling me about the difficulty of a vehicle he had. I don't remember what kind it was. But I related back to him the difficulty I had replacing the very last spark plug in the Ford four-wheel drive pickup that I had. I found that the only way I could get to it without the proper tool was to lay down on the ground and come from underneath it and take it off. The point I'm trying to make is it's much easier to accomplish a task if you have the proper tools. When it comes to prayer, there are a lot of contributing factors that either make the prayers successful or unsuccessful. But there are underlying principles and things that need to be cognizant of when we go to our prayer closets. There's probably as much information or more in the Bible about prayer as there is anything else. Or there wouldn't be that much written about it. Even the disciples asked Jesus Christ to teach them how to pray. And he began the Our Father which art in heaven, which was example prayer. It wasn't necessarily the prayer, but it was an example prayer for instructions to his disciples. So there are underlying principles of prayer, and certainly we're just going to touch on a very few. But I tried to look up some that I've not used before, or I used it in a different manner. And so I'm sure you have plenty of those examples where you've read about prayer and some of the significant principles of prayer. So when it comes to prayer, what's important and why do we do it? Put you on the spot, didn't I? When you go to your prayer closets every day, I suppose every day, you have an idea of what you're going to talk to God about, don't you? Some of the things that you want to address, some of the things you want to bring forth to him, some of the things you want to ask for. And all things said, even when you do things for, or you pray for the right motives and the right principles, you're not always going to get your prayers answered in the manner which you would like. There's a lady that rooms with Claire's sister over at the nursing home. Now, we should have asked prayer for her. Her sister now is in the Alzheimer's unit. And she's lost some of her cognizance. I didn't mean to make you sad, but she's lost a lot of her cognizance at this point in time. She's beginning to get better strength physically, but her mind is still not where we would like for it to be. She's rooming with a lady that was Miss Texas in 1974. Now she just, unless you lead her about, she's not really cognizant of a lot of things. Her husband abused her. And I found out this from her sister yesterday, I believe it was. And I asked her sister, I said, where's he live? Because I would like to lay hands on him. If I could have my prayers answered, I would love for that woman to be able to be healed. And your sister. And all the rest of them that are in there. That for the most part, they're not aware of so many things that are going on. The only advantage they have over a lot of people that are sick is that they don't know. They just don't know. And it's extremely sad. So, you've had a little time to think. What are some of the underlying principles of prayer? Some of the things that we need to be cognizant of. Some of the things that we need to have on our mind when we come to a prayer closet. And one of the things that I can think of right offhand is Solomon. When he prayed, he didn't ask for something for himself. That is, he didn't ask for something that would be just of his benefit, but for others. Because he knew that he needed wisdom to be able to judge Israel and to make righteous judgment for the people. So I guess you could say that a lot of times a prayer principle would be one that you are not looking for something for yourself, but you're looking for something that someone else needs. That's a noteworthy cause, isn't it? I mean, to pray for somebody else's behalf. And we're asked to do that, just like Payne did just a few moments ago, for these people who are suffering. What are some of the things that are important when you go to the prayer closet? Let me put it that way. Well, let's just turn to Psalms 56 then. You know, of course, David has much to say about prayer, but I just want to look at one scripture that he has placed in here. I mean, we could go to Psalms 51, and we've read it so many times, we know that he tells us in that psalm that the Lord our God desires truth in the inward person, in the inward parts, in the very most depths of our mind, places we don't go to a lot of times. I know I don't, because I don't want to find out what's in there, I guess. There's a closet that's never cleaned out. But he says that we need honesty in the inward parts. We need to know where we're coming from and just exactly who we are. I could go to the example of the lady who, with her tears and her hair, washed the Savior's feet and anointed him with some expensive oil. And then we could look at a bad example at the same time where this man took issue with that. We could go to the fact where the Pharisee, he began to pray about all the things he was noble about and all the things he was doing during the course of the week. And another man who wouldn't even look up, but he smote his chest and said, "Forgive me, Father, for I am a sinner." Simple prayer. Just right down, it cuts to the chase. He knew what he was. Just like she did when she came to the Anointed One, she knew what she had become. She knew that he knew it, and she knew she wanted to be different. These are all good principles of prayer. But I want to look at this in Psalms, the 56th chapter, and verse 9. I want you to notice what it says. It says, "When I cry unto you, then shall my enemies turn back. This I know." Well, how did he know? How did David know that his God wouldn't answer him? Well, you could say, well, he answered him so many other times. Well, that would certainly be a part of it. But this particular time, he says, "I know." In a lot of his prayers, he says, "I don't know." He says, "Why have you so long answering my prayers? Why don't you hear me? Why don't you avenge me of my enemies?" How come it is that he didn't feel like this all the time? Why? Why didn't David feel like this all the time? Where he knew. Was it a lack of faith on his part? The other times? Well, read into it what you want to, but I know that there are certain times when David, as well as the rest of us, are our own worst enemies, and certainly David did a lot of things that he thought was so important that he not only prayed during the day, morning, noon, and night, but he also meditated upon God's Word when he went to bed. He knew where the value was in the keeping the principles of God, the commandments. He knew that value. He knew what it would bring him, what he would attain through keeping the commandments, God's protection. He had faith. He knew. And he challenged the Philistine, "You uncircumcised Philistine who speaks against the God that I worship." He went out with 3 stones. He wasn't just, I guess you might say, so sure of himself or sure of God that, either way you want to read into it, that it was going to just use, he was just going to make it with 1 stone. He took out 3. He wasn't presumptuous, I don't think. He had faith. Later on, though, in years past, he had all these doubts, and he had all the prayers that went up, and he wasn't sure. But this time here, he says, "I know." And I want to focus in on that, because there's times in my prayer life, and probably yours too, where you know that you feel that you have actually had an effective prayer that actually reached our Creator. There's other times when I think I'm just going through the motions, or I'm just repetitive, or I didn't feel sincere about it. Has anybody ever been uncertain about praying? Where you just didn't think probably that, as they say, it went through the roof. I think most of us experience that. But there are times when, on the other hand, we've experienced a prayer that actually we knew went to our Creator, even before it was answered. Now, one of the things that is a good principle about prayer, unanswered prayer, or prayers unanswered in the manner in which you pray, one of the wonderful principles about that is if you continue to pray to our Creator, that it shows your faith. Even though you didn't get what you want, even though it wasn't answered like you wanted it to be answered, you still have faith in the One. And that's one of the things that the psalmist says so many times. Even though his prayers were not answered as quick as he would like, in exactly the same way, but he continued to have faith in God and pray to Him no matter what. In the face of his enemies, he still continued to pray. I mean, he'd ask relevant questions like, how long will you allow this to happen? How long will it be before you actually hear me? How long will it be before my prayer is answered like I ask? He had all these questions, and they're relevant questions. And there are lessons to be learned from this by him and as well as the rest of us. But here, I want to read that again. When I cry unto you, then shall my enemies turn back. This I know. Let me ask you this. You go to your prayer closet and you know that the prayer has went to your God. What do you suppose that is? And of course, that makes your prayer different. The mornings you're full of joy, you're probably more bringing more praise to God and thanking Him for the things that you have, for the things that He's done for you. And when you, let me put it to you like this. Does it make any difference how close you are to God? And how do you get close to Him? Yeah, just like Marvin said, you do what He says. And David understood. He was an intelligent man. He understood when he hadn't done his part. He says, you desire us to know ourselves in the inward part. Parts like a lot of times we like to push aside and bring forth in our minds our best picture of ourselves, whether it be true or not. We like that. We like to stroke ourselves. We like to think that we're a good person, not a bad person. And sometimes that's certainly the case both ways. But David here, at this time, he says, I know. And he knew because at that particular time, he was closer to God, certainly, than he was when he took Uriah the Hittite's wife. I mean, like, he knew. So therefore, if I had done something like that, or you had done something like that, you took somebody else's spouse, how effective do you think your prayer would be in that particular time? Not very effective. So God tells us in the New Testament, we'll probably read that to draw closer to Him, and then He'll draw closer to us. Like you're talking about your parents. The more you draw closer to their will, the more likely they will be to help you in time of need. Certainly God is just like that. He's a parent. Let's go over the book of James, the first chapter, James 1. These are scriptures we've read so many times, but maybe we can extrapolate from them something that we haven't noticed in a while. In James, the first chapter, he talks about the trials that will come on us, the different temptations, the things that we probably are going to have to pray about in a time of our weaknesses, in a time we're being tempted. There was a temptation that was going to come on Peter that Peter didn't see. He said, I tell you what, I'll be in death with you. And of course, Christ told him, says, well, before the cock crows, you'll deny me three times. Peter didn't see that. He didn't believe it. But when you're afraid for your life, when you're coming under a manifold temptations, your wants are overwhelming you, it says we're to count that joy. Why? Why would we count it joy when we're being tempted? Because it's an avenue or venue for a closeness with God. Because we're always going to go to God when we're in trouble, aren't we? We're not always going to go to God when we want to do something that we want to do outside of Him. But when we want to be delivered from a problem or a situation, we're always going to go to Him. And when He assists us and helps us in overcoming those things, it's a venue for growth. Because every time that we have went to God in prayer and He has answered it according to our will, it just boosts our faith. When you come under a certain desire that you don't want, like Paul wrote about in the 7th chapter of Romans, you need God's help. And you're at a point in your life where you know that. And there's nobody else that can do what God can do. And James is talking about that, and he says, knowing this, that the trying of your faith works patience. Anybody have an overabundance of patience? I could use some. But he says, on verse 4, he says, but let patience have its perfect work, its complete work, that you may be perfect and entire, perfect in moral character, full age, completeness, wanting nothing, meaning that you're complete, you're sound. He goes on to tell us that if any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, and that God gives to all men liberally. Ask God. There's a lot of situations that we could probably get into that we don't know the way out. We don't know the answer. We don't know. I keep harkening back to Mrs. Shelton. And she hadn't got herself in a situation, but her son was going to join the service, army, I suppose. And it was during a time when maybe there was some conflict going on or whatever. But the thing about it is she just couldn't stand it. And she prayed to God, says, I know you won't put any more on us than we can handle. But she's honest with him. She says, I don't think I can handle this. And he changed his mind. Now, I'm going to give credit to God. And so this is the same thing. He said, ask of God that gives to all men liberally and upbraids not, and it shall be given him. But let him ask in faith, none wavering. Now, I'll be honest with you. Some of my prayers have been, and that's the reason I know they're not very effective, because I have wavered. I haven't seen the light at the end of the tunnel. I haven't been most honest. I'm most effective, certainly not. But I keep going back. I keep going back, knowing that I'm asking the right person. He says at verse 8, a double-minded man is unstable in all of his ways. I mean, it's just like one day yes, one day no. It's just kind of like fluctuating back and forth. And Christ told us, said, you know, if a man want to come after me, follow me. And Christ was not like that. He was in tune with what his Father desired of him. Isaiah 59, I just happened to throw this in because it's a principle that we do, and the effect of it is something that we do not want. Isaiah 59, verse 1, he says, behold, the Lord's hand is not shortened, that it cannot save, neither is his ear heavy that he cannot hear. His office is open 24/7. The door is open, so to speak. You've heard people say that about their workplace. You know, my door is always open. Well, his really is. And it doesn't matter what time, what place you need to speak to him. He's there. But he says, verse 2, your iniquities have separated between you and your God. So that's a distancing. Every time we do things that we know we're not supposed to, that puts distance between us and God. The closer we are to his commandment keeping, the righteousness of God through the law, it proves to him that we want the righteousness of Christ, that we're obeying Christ. When he says, I even Paul said, follow me as I follow Christ. The example of Christ is what we're trying to accomplish. But he says, they've separated between you and your God, and your sins have hid his face from you, that he will not hear. There's a time when God's not going to hear. If I'm in this position, it's a time I really need to pray. When you're at your weakest, and you feel worthless, and you feel like, you know, there's nothing good that you can accomplish. All things are possible through God who loves us. He talks about verse 3, your hands are defiled with blood. Verse 4, none calls for justice. Verse 3, you hatch cockatrice eggs. You're like a whited sepulcher on the outside, full of hypocrisy inside. In verse 6, it says, their webs shall not become garments, neither shall they cover themselves with their works. Their works are works of iniquity. And the act of violence is in their hands. Their feet run to evil. Verse 7, verse 8, the way of peace they do not know. There's no judgment. They're crooked paths, and you shall not know peace. You know, one of the things that is so encouraging about prayer is that when you're at least, when you find little peace in your life, little comfort, very little encouragement, this prayer will help you to find peace. Because he's showing here that their lack of righteousness, is affecting their prayers. This brings to mind also in a place in the New Testament, which I didn't write down the instructions, but it talks about how we treat our spouse. The principle behind that particular set of scriptures is this. We're supposed to treat our spouse like Christ treats us. We're supposed to show the love of Christ toward our spouse that he showed toward us. His love was so great that he was willing to go to that terrible death that you sang about. He was willing to do that for us. Now, it would be nice if some of our motives were so noble. Well, sometimes they're just not. We're people, we need to admit when we're not having the motives that he would love to have in us. It goes on, talks about this in this particular chapter, verse 15. It says, those that depart from evil, they make themselves a prey to everybody else, taken advantage of. From there, let's go to James, the fourth chapter, James 4. Look at a set of scriptures here that talks about prayer and some of the principles behind effective prayer. And James, let's go to the fourth chapter, right after the book of Hebrews. In James, the fourth chapter, he commences to telling us why we don't have what we ask for. There's wrong motives. And the wrong motives we see in verses 3 through 6, the consequences of those wrong motives. And in verse 7 through 10, we see the cure for those wrong motives. He says, submit yourself therefore to God and resist the devil and he will flee from you. A lot of times in our low points in our life, the devil's pretty close, or his demons. And he uses our weaknesses. He knows them better than we do. And he'll use those against us. But he says, the cure is, draw near to God, verse 8, and he will draw near to you, cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded, unstable. And he says, be afflicted and mourn and weep, and let your laughter be turned to mourning and your joy to heaviness. Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he shall lift you up. There's times when we need God, and he's the only one that can help. He can lift us up when no one else can. There's times when we do things in our lives that we don't even want to share with each other. True? But we can always take things to God because he desires that we pour it out to him, that we lay it open, that we don't pull back, that we don't won't get over or snow ourselves or try to give him a snow job because he already knows. But he wants us to come in confession so that he can help. And every time he helps, that just makes us stronger in the faith of prayer. So here he gives the cure of that prayer that's not very effective. It's a principle of drawing close to him that he may draw close to us. Persistence, Luke the 18th chapter. Sometimes persistence works. Luke 18. Sometimes persistence has its place in prayer. Luke the 18th chapter, I'd like to begin in verse, let's read verse 1. And my margin says, concerning prayer, he spake a parable unto them to this end, that men ought always to pray and not to faint. So, he's talking about persistence and that we shouldn't faint. If you always pray, have the persistence that's necessary, because he goes on to say this. It talks about an unjust judge who did not fear God, neither regarded men. He was out for his own benefit, wasn't he? In verse 3 it says, and there was a widow in that city, and she came unto him, saying, avenge me of my adversaries. You know, I need somebody to speak up for me. I need somebody to take up my cause. Because she says, I'm, you know, you can read between the lines, I am not able to do this. I need somebody to be an advocate for me, to avenge me of this enemy I have, of this person who's trying to do me wrong. And it says, and he would not for a while, but afterward he said within himself, though I fear not God nor regard man, yet because the widow troubles me, I will avenge her, lest by her continual coming she wearies me. Persistence is here. And she receives that which she asked for. He says, verse 7, and shall God not avenge his own elect, which cry day and night unto him, though he bear long with them? What does that mean, he bears long with them? Will they not hear? Will he not hear? Though he bears long with them? Means he allows things for an undetermined amount of time for us until, in other words, he's deferring a prayer. He's deferring the will that's inside the prayer. He's deferring the answer. I think most of you know that Claire was in a terrible accident, her and I, back many years ago. Her leg was broken. Church, her, I, her family, we prayed constantly that her leg would be healed because it wouldn't heal. She had countless number of bone grafts. One hip, they took bone from 3 times, and the other one 2 times. And it would begin to heal, and then it would set up infection, and it was just 6 years. But you know what come out of that 6 years? Her salvation. Because without that 6 years, she or I, neither one, were going to slow down. We were not coming to God. He was not in our thoughts. He was not in our prayers. He was not in our activities, I can tell you that. But as a result of my stupidity, and a certain amount of hers, for being with me, the best thing in the world that could happen to her happened. Our neighbor come across the street. I don't know, she was in her 80s, I suppose, and she started talking to Claire. She started visiting her because she knew she'd been in an accident. And so she come to talk to her and visit with her, and she said, during the course of conversation, I guess I've probably told you this before, but bear with me. She says, I'm not like most old people. And Claire asked her, said, what do you mean? She said, well, I don't go to bed early. Me and her have something in common. And Claire asked her, said, what do you do? She says, I stay up fairly late at night reading my Bible. She thought about it. Up until that point, I would go to these what I call garbage sales, garage sales, and I'd buy all these Harlequin romance books and bring them home to her to read. She was laid up. She couldn't do much. And, you know, you get bored. And she found some enjoyment in reading those books. But when the lady mentioned reading her Bible, she put those aside. I didn't buy any more. She started reading her Bible. And God was leading her to the truth. She was baptized in the Church of Christ, was in there for just a few months, and she started asking questions. They were ready to get rid of her. In the meantime, she had started watching a program on the television, and Mr. Garnard said Armstrong was on there, and she started ordering all the literature and books and tapes that she could get, just like she was just like an animal foraging, you know, just couldn't get enough. God was working with her. And then after he worked with her and brought her to repentance and receiving God's Spirit, salvation, then he started working through her on me. I wasn't praying for it. I wasn't asking God in my life. She would show me the scriptures, and I'd say, sweetheart, just Greek. Meant nothing. Couldn't comprehend. The Bible couldn't be understood, as far as I was concerned. Talk to me about the Sabbath. I said, well, every other church couldn't be wrong. Prevalent thought when you're, what do they call them, a heathen, unconverted. So that's the way I thought. All the other churches are going to be wrong. But anyway, to make a long story short, she was an avenue for me to come to God and to receive salvation. That terrible thing that she and I both underwent for 6 years was the best thing that could have happened to either one of us. Now, I didn't believe it at the time, and I wouldn't have told you that was the best thing. I thought it was the most horrible thing that I could have done to another person. Caused an accident that would cause her to break her leg. I guess Paul and I have something in common because he was a rascal before he was converted too, to say the least. But he came through it with God's help. I mean, if God can help Paul, he can help anyone. I think so, that's some of the messages that we get from Paul's example. Now, let's go to the book of Deuteronomy, the 3rd chapter. I want to show you something here, something that I alluded to. I want you to notice what it says. Was Moses a great man before God? He thought he was. Yeah. I'm saying God thought he was. God knew he was. God wanted to use him as a instrument to lead the children over to the promised land. But guess what happens? He's there with the children all those 40 years in the wilderness, and guess what? His answer to his prayer was no. In the third chapter, the book of Deuteronomy, I want to read down to verse 23. And I besought the Lord at that time, saying, O Lord, thou hast begun to show your servant your greatness and your mighty hand. For what God is there in heaven on earth that can do according to your works and according to your might? I pray thee. I pray to you. Let me go over and let me see the good land. Moses made a mistake, and God called him on it. And when he asked to go beyond Jordan to that goodly mountain at Lebanon, verse 26, the Lord was angry with me for your sakes and would not hear me. Not every prayer that doesn't get answered in the manner that we want it is because he's not listening. But in this particular case, forget it. He says, he would not hear me. And the Lord said unto me, let it be sufficient to you. Speak no more unto me of this matter. You couple this particular set of scriptures with the scriptures where the instruction was that my grace is sufficient unto you, talking to Paul. Paul prayed three times. Then we can look at the example of Jesus Christ when he said, Father, if it be possible, let this cup pass from me, but nevertheless not my will, but yours be done. But three times he prayed. The answer was no, because it couldn't be. In the example of Paul in Corinthians, it's the same thing. But he says, my grace is sufficient unto you. Now, does that mean we're only supposed to pray three times? Well, it is if you hear the voice of God speaking to you and saying, no. But I don't know how many, I've never. When I've prayed, so I have to conclude that I have to be persistent and continue in prayer, as he said in other scriptures. James, the fifth chapter, another principle that James applies to prayers, James, the fifth chapter, and James 5, and verse 4. Notice what James says here. Behold, the hire of the laborers who have reaped down your fields, which is of you kept back by fraud, they cry, and the cries of them which have reaped are entered into the ears of the Lord of the Sabbath. In this world, you're not going to escape this world without being taken advantage of. Mr. Williams and I was talking about that a while back, where you can't trust people. You can't just outright trust people to do what you ask them to do. Or you can't trust them if you take your vehicle to get repaired and they're just going to do what needs to be done and let you go. Especially women are taken advantage of many times when it comes to vehicles. The same principle applies in those situations as it does here. These people were working and they were denied their efforts of wages. And he goes on to say that you have had pleasure, that is, lived in pleasure. He's talking about rich people, a rich person. And been wanton, you have nourished your hearts, and as in the day of slaughter, you've condemned and you've killed the just. Verse 7, be patient, therefore, brethren, unto the coming of the Lord. Behold, the husbandman waiteth for the precious fruit of the earth, and he has long patience for it until he receives the early and latter rain. Be also you patient, establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord draws near. The message last week focused upon God's kingdom and how important it was to God to preach that message of Christ's saving sacrifice and God's coming kingdom, the thing that we look forward to so much, especially when we are defrauded or we are sick or we have the problems of life trying to obtain three beautiful children. All the red tape, all the government formalities, all the things that we're frustrated by. He says, be patient, and I'm going to come quickly. Doesn't seem so to us, does it? Verse 9, he says, grudge not against another, brethren, lest you be condemned. Behold, the judge stands at the door. So when the times are worse for us and our prayer life is not working the way we want it to, we're not to turn on each other. There's another scripture in the New Testament where it says we should be careful not to devour one another. I'm guilty as the next person. Sometimes when things aren't going right and I'm upset and someone I love says something to me, I just, as they say, bite their heads off. It's not intentional, but it's part of me, a part that I wish was not there. But he says, be careful. Do not grudge one another, nor bite and devour one another. I want to close now. Let's go to 2 Corinthians 8 chapter. I think you're well aware of what it says here about the contribution that was being taken up for those who were in need of assistance. 2 Corinthians 8 chapter, I want us to look at this a little bit closer than probably we do at times. In verse 1, he says, moreover, brethren, we do to you wit of the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia. First, he's talking about the grace, and that comes from God. Moving through people here, we see that how great a trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded to the riches of their liberality. Poor people were probably in need themselves, but saw somebody worse off. The grace of God moving through those people, giving more than they had the power to do. For verse 3 it says, to their power I bear record, yes, and beyond their power they were willing of themselves. The grace, number one, applied to the willing. You see, I don't personally believe that God is going to do anything for me that I can't do for myself. And some of the things I can't do for myself, some of you can. And that's exactly what he expects. The grace of God working through willing people, meeting the needs of others. Verse 4, praying us with much entreaty that we would receive the gift and take upon us the fellowship of the ministering of the saints. I'm a prideful man to a certain extent, and I guess a lot of men are. We want to be independent. We want to take care of ourselves. We don't want to depend on anyone else. We just don't. That's part of the psyche of a man. You don't believe it, you tell him to go ask directions somewhere. We don't need any directions. We're men. We don't get lost. We can find our way. I can now that I have a GPS. If it doesn't lead me in the wrong direction, I can find my way. But pride has an effect on us that is so unbeneficial. Have any of you ever been offered help and turned it down? There are times when I or others have turned down help from those that the grace of God had moved on, and they were willing, but we weren't willing. We denied the grace of God through a man. We denied that man a blessing of giving to us something we needed. And I'll never forget, I've got to mention this, Bobby and Sam. Sam's gone now. Bobby's still living. There was a time when I first came into church, and financially we weren't that well off. And of course it was known. I mean, we didn't advertise it, but they knew. We received a monetary gift from them, and we accepted it. The very first opportunity I had was to get on my knees and pray. I did so with tears. It's somebody that God had moved to help me. See, I still don't believe that God is going to do anything for us that we can't do ourselves. Okay? I don't. Things that we can do for ourselves, he expects. I believe that, and I'll believe it till the day I die. So when somebody is trying to help you, receive it as a grace of God working through his children.